Welcome to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson in Outreach Ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. This program is designed to take you back to basic principles for living found in the Word of God.
So hey everybody, turn up your radio. Listen to your soul cry the question why song makes you wonderful. Something you never seen before.
Pastor Brian is currently teaching from the book of Romans and will be continuing today with part one of The Truth About Sin and Death. So let's turn in our Bibles to Romans chapter 5, verse 12, as Pastor Brian takes us back to basics.
It's reconciliation that Paul is now going to go on and talk about. He's talked about atonement. He's talked about imputation. He's talked about propitiation. All of these terms that we have brought up and defined and explained as we've been going through here. Reconciliation, we've mentioned that. But now Paul is going to develop the idea of reconciliation a little bit. And that's why verse 12 says, therefore. So he's making that connection. Therefore, just as through one man. So here's his point in the remainder of the chapter. Just as through one man, Adam, we were estranged from God. That's how it happened. Through the act of Adam, all humanity was estranged from God. So just as through one man's sin, Adam's sin, we were estranged from God, so through one man, Christ, we are reconciled to God. And that's what Paul's developing here in this, beginning in verse 12 and on through pretty much the remainder of the fifth chapter. And so we're going to get to that. We're going to talk more about that in the weeks ahead. But before we go into these details, we need to stop and consider this 12th verse alone. Let me read it to you. Therefore, just as through one man sin entered the world, and death through sin, and thus death spread to all men because all sinned. This 12th verse is one of the most important verses in the Bible from the standpoint of theology and philosophy. It's a very critical verse. You know, there are certain theological truths that are foundational to the Christian faith. And one of those theological truths is something that we probably have all heard. Maybe some of us know a little bit more, you know, about what it actually is referring to than others, but it's the idea of original sin. Now, I remember clearly hearing about original sin being brought up in Catholicism, because that was, you know, that was why it was necessary to be baptized as a baby, to be cleansed from that original sin. And I remember even from, you know, my childhood, that just that, you know, the term itself just sort of got lodged in my head, original sin. But what is original sin? Is that a reality? Is that, you know, something that was made up? So this is where we find it explained in the scriptures. That's what he's talking about. So from the theological standpoint, original sin is elaborated on here by the Apostle Paul. But then there's also a philosophical thing here that goes over into the area of of some of the mysteries of life. Two of the world's greatest mysteries are actually solved in this one Bible verse. You know, what philosophy is, it's basically man's attempt to understand why things are the way they are, and it's an attempt to understand it through reason rather than through revelation. Revelation is God telling you why things are the way they are. Reason is, in this philosophical sense that I'm talking about, it's generally a rejection of what God has said about it, and we're going to try to figure it out on our own, or we're going to come up with an alternative view of things. So that's why I say that there's both theological and philosophical issues here, because these are huge issues philosophically. The two issues are these, or the two mysteries. The mystery of why man is more inclined to evil than good, and the mystery of why all people die. Those are mysteries that have been grappled with by people from the earliest times of history. These are the kinds of things that the philosophers and the theologians have been dealing with. Other things as well, but these obviously are two primary things. So as we look at the world, we're confronted by these two undeniable facts. Fact number one is the universality of sin. This is an observable thing. It's something that we all can see. We all have not just observed it in others, we've all participated in it. But of course, sin is not a word that is popular. It's not a word that people like to use, especially the more philosophically oriented people. But even those who don't want to use terms like sin or evil admit that there is something wrong that tends to spoil life, to spoil and ruin life. Some will even admit further that mankind at large seems to prefer to do what is wrong rather than what is right. So it's not just us, Bible-believing people, that see this. Everybody sees it, but not everybody agrees as to what is the cause of it or what it is that we really are seeing. Now, God says what we're seeing is what he calls sin, but the philosophers will have a different explanation for what is seen. One of the things I like to do is just browse through bookstores, and I saw this book with a great title, and I thought, I got to get this book. And, you know, it was like $8 or something, and that was even more of an incentive to get the book. But I thought, I'm going to get this book because I know at some point this book's going to come in handy. It's not written by a Christian, written more by a philosopher, but it's dealing with this very subject. So let me read you just a little bit, actually, from the inside cover of this particular book. And I'll give you the name and the author in a moment. But listen to what it says. It says, "For all our therapies, resolutions, self-help programs, and the vast religious and ethical literature available to men and women today, we turn again and again to the same limiting and predictable behaviors, vowing to do better next time. And far beyond the travails of everyday existence, although sometimes intruding upon it with ghastly shock, we witness a world twisted in conflict and warfare. While individuals and populations divide against one another in the kinds of mutual destruction over which every generation claims to have learned its lessons. For sensitive people everywhere, the question resounds," here's the title of the book, "Why Can't We Be Good?" Listen, after nearly 40 years of weighing humanity's deepest dilemmas, Working in settings ranging from university to high school classrooms to corporate offices to hospitals, best-selling author, philosopher, and religious scholar Jacob Needleman, who is a professor at San Francisco State University, presents the most urgent, deeply felt, and widely accessible work of his career, this particular book. In Why Can't We Be Good, Needleman identifies the core problem that therapists and social philosophers fail to see. He depicts the individual human, listen, as a being who knows what is good, yet who remains mysteriously helpless to inwardly adopt the ethical, moral, and religious ideas that are bequeathed to him. Now, the reason that I'm sharing this with you is because it illustrates the point that I'm making. That the Bible has an answer to what we see, but man has attempted to come up with an answer to what we see as well. Now, I haven't had a chance to get through the book, but I know this for sure. Although Needleman, the author, although he does reference the Bible at times, at the end of the day, he doesn't believe that the Bible's answer is really the answer. So he's typical of the philosophical approach to these kinds of issues. So, but again, the point is we see that here's a guy who's acknowledging that we have got a problem and it's a universal problem, the universality of sin. So secondly, the universality of death. That's what is dealt with right here in this 12th verse of the 5th chapter, these two things. Now, I don't need to belabor this one, really, do I? Every man living will die. The moment you come into this world, you're on your way out. Kind of a pessimistic view, but it is reality. The moment you take your first breath, it is the beginning of a series that will lead to your last breath. And so death, needless to say, is a universal fact. But what is the explanation for what we see, this universality of sin? Some people wouldn't want to refer to it that way, but we will. What is the explanation for this? Well, the explanation for these two facts can be divided into two categories. We're living in a time when there's more, I think there's more of an emphasis in the culture today on philosophy than there has been in previous generations. And I'm talking about American culture primarily. European culture has for a long time been dominated by various philosophies. But that has been imported into the U.S. And I think back, 20 years ago, you didn't need to deal with this stuff as extensively as you do today because the mentality was a little bit different back then. People were more interested in just, pragmatic kind of things. Hey, if it works, let's just do it. We don't need to ask a bunch of questions about it. That sort of mentality. But today, and I think especially with the younger generations, they're becoming more and more philosophically oriented. So this kind of stuff is going out more and more, and especially anybody who's attended a university in the past, 10 to 15 years, or maybe you're currently there, that this is true. And what's happened in our universities? All of those European philosophies have now come over, and they dominate the mindset of most of the professors in the universities today. So that's one of the reasons, but it's not just on the level of, the academic level. It filters itself down into pop culture. Growing up in the 70s, 60s, 70s, the music we listened to back then, well, the 60s and maybe early 70s, kind of had that philosophical and, there was that element to it because there was a big emphasis on peace. And the further you got into the 70s and the 80s, it just became about kind of just hedonism, just all the music kind of centered around parties and sex and drugs and rock and roll. I mean, that was kind of the theme of the 70s. But you listen to music today and you find that it's kind of shifted back to where it was before, where lyrically speaking, everything's philosophical, everything's political. There's always, there's some kind of a message, maybe environmentalism or, some other, perceived marginalized group. We're going to write a song that's going to become you know, sort of an anthem for them or something like that. So all of that to say, you know, this stuff is just, it's just more a part of our culture today than it was before. So we've got to be able to address it. So we have to understand that when you look at these things, that these are observable. Everybody sees them, like I'm saying. Of course, everybody knows that people die. But, you know, most people recognize, too, that, you know, people tend to be bad or tend to have more of that inclination. So the explanations, there is, first of all, the naturalistic explanation, and then there's the biblical explanation, and there's really nothing in between. It's just one or the other. Now, there are variations in the naturalistic explanation, but they all essentially are pretty much saying the same thing. So it kind of comes down to, there's two worldviews. There's a biblical worldview, and then there's the naturalistic worldview. Now, I understand that we have other religions. Most other religions, maybe, you know, say Buddhism or Hinduism or something like that, their outlook, it kind of incorporates a lot of, you know, what kind of like even a secular humanism would have within it. Islam would be maybe the only distinction. But anyway, without getting into all that, the naturalistic explanation are explanations based upon man's philosophies, including science. Now, I say including science because, of course, a big area of philosophy today is in science, and especially when we're talking about Darwinian science. So that's the naturalistic explanation. And then there's the biblical explanation. What's a biblical explanation? Well, it's an explanation based on the scripture. So what I want to do is I want to look at the naturalistic explanation of both the universality of sin and the universality of death. Then I want to look at the biblical explanation. And then we want to consider which explanations are better. And then lastly, we want to look at solutions. Are there any solutions that are offered? Now, if somebody has an explanation for something or a diagnosis of something, then generally they're going to have some sort of a solution. So the naturalistic explanation for the universality of sin. Now, I want to quote directly here from Martin Lloyd-Jones, who was a very famous British preacher. He was a Welshman, but he pastored in London for 40 years at Westminster Chapel. He's a very brilliant man from the biblical standpoint, but his background was in medicine. In his early 20s, he was the assistant physician to the royal family. So he was a very accomplished and highly advanced medical man, even in his early days. So, you know, this is a guy, especially in Britain at the time, kind of the heyday of Darwinism, he would have been educated in all of this stuff. So he kind of summarizes the naturalistic explanation. And even though he did this back in the 50s or 60s, things haven't changed much. So I think these summarizations are pretty much what you would get today if you press somebody to give you an explanation as to what is going on in the life of these, say, criminals, you know, these people who everybody would agree are problems to society, dangerous, whatever. So this is what he says. This is his summarization. The universality of sin. Man has never been perfect, the naturalist would say. Man has never been perfect. Man is in the process of evolving from the animal kingdom. His cerebrum has developed beyond that of the other animals, but he has not yet shed all of his past. He still has the same basic animal nature, yet he also has his mind with its powers of reason and understanding. Thus, the conflict is between the higher and lower nature. And so this is what they would say then. Man is not really bad. And again, this is very much the case today. You know, there are very few people or behaviors in society today that you are allowed to call bad. Very few. So, man is not really bad. What you should say about him is that he is not yet good. Not bad, just lacking good qualities. So this is the naturalistic explanation for what we see when we look around the world and we see hatred and jealousy and rage and oppression. It's because man is just lacking some good qualities at this point. So, the universality of death. Here's the summary. Death is part of the circle of life. Life begins, develops, and grows, matures, blossoms, and having reached its peak, begins to wear and decay until eventually it dies. This is the pattern of human existence. It is something that is inherent in life itself. When trees and flowers and animals die, the decomposed matter to which they give rise is most valuable. It produces nitrogen, which is, after all, the basis of life. Death leads to life by liberating the nitrogen that is needed to form the molecules of new life. Death is just part of the cycle of life, always has been, always will be. So that is the naturalistic explanation for the existence of death. Now, here's a couple of questions that I would ask those who hold to these views. If man was never perfect, you see, because this is a direct contradiction to what the Bible says. And of course, it's an evolutionary idea. Man is, you know, he's evolving. He's coming from way down here, and he's slowly making his way upward. He's, you know, coming out of the animal world, and he's developing, he's progressing as he goes. The biblical picture is the exact opposite. Man started up here, and he fell down to here. So, but this is a question I would ask. If man never was perfect and cannot be said to be bad, but rather is in the process of shedding his old animal nature and evolving into a higher life form, why does every man, regardless of race, creed, or culture, have the idea that he ought to behave in a certain way and feels guilty when he fails to do so? See, that's a universal reality. Guilt is a universal reality. The idea of ought is a universal reality. Even people that hold tenaciously to these ideas, their very behavior contradicts what they claim to believe. Because if you do something to them that's unpleasant, they will tell you that you ought not to have done that. But on what basis should I have not done that? What, is there some standard somewhere that tells me that I shouldn't do that? You see, this is the problem with this whole relativistic thing. I was watching this video clip today, and a talk show or news guy interviewing some guy. He kind of surprised him with a question at the beginning, but he asked kind of that, you know, age-old question. Epicurus was, I think, the one who first formulated it. It's a favorite of atheists. So what is it? Is it that God is all-powerful, but he just doesn't care? Or is it that God really does care, but he just doesn't have the power to do anything about it? And he was talking about the tsunami and all of that stuff. And it was obvious that he really took this guy off guard. But, you know, to those kinds of questions, I think there's another question that needs to be asked. And this is the question. Why is the tsunami bad? Why is an earthquake killing thousands of people? Why is that a bad thing? If this whole thing that we call life and this whole planet that we live on and this universe that we find ourselves in, if all of this is just an accident cosmically, if it just it has all naturalistic explanations for it, if it's really true, like these guys think, that death is just part of the circle of life. Hey, you know, it's just like the plants. Rejoice, you get to provide nitrogen so other plants can grow. I mean, you know, if that's really true, then why is it bad that people die in a tsunami or in an earthquake or in any other kind of disaster? Why is it bad? You see, if death is just part of the cycle of life, why does man still fear it? And why can't we accept it? And why does it seem so unnatural? I mean, these guys are saying, look, it's natural. It's just part of the natural process. Does anybody really think that way when they're face to face with death?
We'll return with more insightful lessons from the book of Romans in our next study as Pastor Brian continues with part two of The Truth About Sin and Death. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of this study, or perhaps you'd like to review it again at a more convenient time, you can do so by simply calling us toll-free at 1-800-733-6443 and request the message entitled The Truth About Sin and Death. Or if you prefer, simply refer to it by resource number B0124. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-733-6443. Pastor Brian would also love to connect with you online, and he can be found at facebook.com/Pastor Brian Broderson, also on Twitter at twitter.com/Brian Broderson. And for those of you that prefer to write, you can address your correspondence to Back to Basics, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And when writing or calling, be sure to ask for a free catalog of available resources from Back to Basics, and please include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. You're also invited to visit our website at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can listen to archived messages by Pastor Brian or subscribe to our podcasts. Once again, that's backtobasicsradio.com.
Turn up your radio.
Back to Basics is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.